Lips.com, and this is my first day on the new network, so we're expecting to have first day issues. So I just want to qualify you for that, so your expectations are set low. Anyway, I've had a couple of weeks off to kind of rest, really. People don't realize that although this radio gig doesn't pay anything, it's really like working a full-time job. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of work, and I've enjoyed my last 2 weeks off since I departed my previous network. And not to go on too long, to wax poetically here for too much, I want to introduce my guest for today, Senior Editor of VeteransToday.com, Mr. Gordon Duff. Gordon, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
You're talking to the only other person you could find who has a worse no-pay job than you do.
Yes, I know. Being Editor of Veterans Today, that's another no-pay job. But you know what? I kind of look at this a little bit different, Gordon. I've developed the attitude that it may not pay, but this is like my community service work. This is for all the bad things I've done in my misspent youth that I never got caught for. So I
do this for pure enjoyment. I do it in order to just smack the living bejesus out of, well, on behalf of American veterans and the people who think like I do, whoever you are out there. Those who don't, I believe, need to be punished. I got the materials to do it, and I'm going to do it, and I enjoy the heck out of it, as do the 150 writers and 17 editors of Veterans Today. We live for nothing else, and we enjoy this beyond human measure.
Well, you know, it's really one of the things that the mainstream media has really fallen off the cliff. They used to have journalism as something that was used to keep politicians honest. But it appears that, well, it doesn't appear, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that the mainstream media has been co-opted and is now part of the propaganda machine that is in cahoots with our government and our financial institutions, big corporations, big business.
Michael, you're on a new network here. Let's go to where you and I really believe. You and I really believe that everyone involved in politics in the United States is tied to organized crime. Absolutely everyone. That you couldn't be a judge, dog catcher, assemblyman in this country unless you were willing to submit to the orders of others. And that far too many vocal Americans that hang out on the internet and elsewhere are so utterly and absolutely ignorant that they would give their lives to make sure that we had an even worse government than the one we have now.
Well, let's talk about organized crime and government, because, you know, in the past, 18, 20 months or so, I lost two friends. One of them was a sitting sheriff in Cochise County, Larry Deaver, who was murdered in what's called a Boston Breaks type situation. And the other guy was a candidate for sheriff in Pinell County, Arizona. Was J.T. Reddy, who allegedly committed suicide and shot his wife, his son-in-law, his stepdaughter, their child, but neglected to shoot the other daughter hiding upstairs into the bed before he shot himself in the head with a handgun he didn't have a caliber for.
Well, that reminds me of back in 2007 when the commanding officer of Menaud Air Force Base, where at least six hydrogen bombs were stolen. And anybody that doesn't keep track of America's diminishing nuclear command, how every member of our nuclear command since that time has been fired, committed suicide, ended up in prison, died of cancer, motorcycle accidents, plane crashes, every single one is gone. I mean everything, down from two sets of commanders, down five levels, to everybody that sat in a silo, they're all gone. We went under, and one guy not only shot himself in the chest to kill himself with a revolver, by the way, a Colt. Always shoot yourself with a Colt or an in-frame Smith & Wesson. You want to do it right. Shot himself twice fatally, and then sold the gun on GunBroker. I mean, I love that guy. That's a guy who makes plans. that's a guy who should be running a country's nuclear forces and must have done a really good job with ours.
Well, you know, you bring up a lot of things here. One of the challenges that I have with moving to this new network, and I want to just say thank you to Hawk and to the whole staff, Kat, et cetera, for inviting me and giving me, you know, such really good prime airtime, is I want to thank them for that. But one of the challenges that I have is that I have new listeners out there now who've never heard me before. And so I need to get them up to speed on what the concept is behind the show here. And where we want to go with it, because do I have all the answers? No, I don't. But I make a very sincere effort to try to give the best information possible. I don't want to present an agenda like the Sean Hannity's or the Rush Limbaugh's. They've got an agenda. They're out pushing a cause. I don't want to do that because I think the people out there who listen are intelligent enough that if they're given the information, if they're given the facts, that they will come to their own conclusions. And I'm not smart enough to think for other people. I never have been and never will be. But I really want to kind of introduce that concept. This is an effort to present the best, most accurate information we can. And what you, the listeners, do with that information is really up to you. I don't have an influence on that. Hopefully the information will be of utility to you.
Mike?
Yeah. Yes.
Let me grind us back into radio and let you do this bit at a time here because this is new audience. We have to break them in somehow. They're used to, and the audience here is used to hearing you as a guest anyway.
Yes, they are. I've been on here on this network several times as a guest. Yes,
and they all pretty much know who I am. If I were to say I'm sick and tired of anything, I'm sick and tired of hearing people's ideas who, first of all, don't have a sound mental process. I don't want to hear them. Internet people. People that haven't done anything in their real lives and who read emails they get, and emails that come in with clever little cartoons. Invariably, we have the facilities to check where they come from. And generally, they come from, they'll come in through the NRA, for instance. They'll come in, if you track them down far enough, through the American Legion or the VFW. Or the American Enterprise Institute, the Potomac Institute, the Heritage Foundation, Fox News, or some other Israeli Zionist organization, which those are. They essentially will come from financing from the Koch brothers who run the oil scamster futures market, and why we pay $4 a gallon for dollar gasoline, because all of the rest goes to them or to pay off politicians to help salt away the money that Bain Capital holds for them in accounts in the Cayman Islands. Is that if it wasn't for the money from drugs and prostitution, our politicians would have to run on ordinary graft, and I don't think they've got the intellect for that. But as far as ideas and individuals, I don't want to hear from anybody, and this is Sean Hannity or others. We remember there was a few weeks ago, there was going to be this earth-shattering cowboy stampede thing on the Bundy Ranch until they realized that Bundy was a welfare cheat and humiliatingly embarrassing. You know what? My feeling about Bundy, since he's become so hated now, and since Sean Hannity and others that went out to the Bundy Ranch are now hiding under a rock somewhere, I'm saying when Bundy made his statements about the Negro and how much he hates the Negro, well, Bundy was only saying what an awful lot of people have been saying for a long time. The problem with those people is that they're all idiots, but they've all been saying it. Bundy just said it openly. So I give Bundy points. I don't give him points for intellect, but I give him points for honesty because he stood up and said what Rush Limbaugh hasn't had the guts to say, what Sean Hannity hasn't had the guts to say. This guy said it for Alex Jones and others. Now, you know where I spent the last week. You might as well tell the audience.
Well, you've been on the Dark Continent. You had some meetings over there with some government officials from, I won't name the countries too?
No.
Okay. But you've been on the Dark Continent. You've been over there in the heart of darkness itself. So.
Okay. And you've seen let's see, videos of my travels.
Yes, I have. I can attest that I've seen the videos of the motorcade, complete with you know, the six or eight motorcycle cops, you know, five, six cars, running every red light that the country has.
Yes, and who do I talk to on the videos and photos you saw?
You were talking to the high command of the one country, intelligence agents from another country, and I believe the president of the host country as well.
Yeah, and you know, lots of photos, and was I not wearing a tie, by the way?
You know, I didn't see a tie on you, Gordon. I think you had an open collar, but you did have a suit on. I have to give
no,
you
no, no, tie. I was wearing a tie, actually, which is, I hate doing this. But the point being is that this is what I normally do. Now, Michael and I maintain relationships with a variety of countries. We work together. We sit on corporate boards here, the UAE, and in Africa, in London. We work in defense and defense intelligence. My last call, he was on until, hey, Jimmy, do you want to stay on the radio? Was Colonel James Hankey was on as, you know, my chief of staff and doesn't want to talk to you guys. He's going to go cook burgers by the pool instead. But we can at least say that we have actual information. So this week, when and for those of you who haven't noticed this, you can find this on Press TV. While we were traveling, we had with us intelligence personnel from one of the Gulf states was with us on our African trip. And one of the things they came to me with, and this is relatively important, is that Gaddafi's money is, and this is what everyone likes to make up things about, where Gaddafi's money is or where someone on the internet says it is. Well, Gaddafi's money, which includes paintings and statues, cash, literal tons of gold, Gaddafi's assets in the hundreds of billions of dollars are in three warehouses in Paris. We know the addresses of. And I'll just tell you what I was asked to do. I was told to put that in an article listing a couple of things. One is that money from Gaddafi's resources, which was removed, truckloads of Gaddafi's wealth was removed from Libya by special forces of minimally, not just the United States and Israel, but France. Is kept in a guard in France. We know where it is. We know where you have it, is what we're saying. We know exactly where. I'll print the addresses. I'm willing to do that. And it isn't just, and you can't just shut me up. We know where it is and what you've been doing with the money. We know you've been funding Boko Haram with the money. We know that you've been buying car bombs to set off in Kenya, five of them last week, with the money. We know that what you've been financing in Egypt with the money. We know what you've bought in Syria with the money. We know how you've sent some of that money into Poland and into the Ukraine and what you're supporting there against the people of eastern Ukraine. We know that this money is going into the coffers of neocon police state forces, and those are former CIA and U.S. Intelligence subcontracting companies. We'll call them Blackwater Google Ideas type companies. And they've been getting Gaddafi's money as well. There's so much of it, it can go out suitcases at a time every 25 minutes, I'm guessing for about 10 years.
Well, I think you're right. Gordon, you're right about that. And I think it's important that people realize that the raid on Gaddafi was not merely to take him out, not merely to subjugate the country, but was to relieve him of his money. And you look at that issue and how they're using it, how this is the material support that is supporting global terrorism.
And the United States knows where it is, hundreds of billions of dollars pouring directly into terrorist organizations around the world, with the full complicity of the United States State Department, full and absolute complicity of the French government, and We have this information from direct sources, not from an email I had accidentally show up. No, I actually had to sit, I was 36 hours between in and out of Frankfurt. Spent some time in Lisbon, by the way, like Lisbon. Flying into Africa, 36 hours on a plane. I do admit it, all first class. I like that part. But you have to get there. You have to meet people in person. And it's sitting up. There are photos of me sitting at the table with the heads of the intelligence agency of a large African country. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm wearing a Marine Corps T-shirt. We're in Africa. And go ahead and tell them what it looked like, the photo.
Well, it looked like a T-shirt you've been sleeping in for the last 8 or 10 years, off and on. One of the T-shirts, when it's a little cold at night, you put a T-shirt on, so you're not...
Oh, yeah.
It looked like one of those.
No alcohol at the table, but totally eaten up. And it's 24... But it's the only way you get information. And toward that end, there is business. Obviously, Michael and I work in the defense contracting business. We run a private intelligence agency along with a significant number of other people. We operate facilities in 24 countries. Veterans Today is an outlet for non-actionable intelligence. We withhold 40% minimally of what comes in. I will never, never hand out actionable intelligence that can get our staffers killed, get other people killed. It's not for us to change the world, but we can allow, and whether you like this or not, I don't care. I just don't care because nobody's paying me. You're right. If you want to start sending me money, sign up, send me $250,000 a month. You'll get all of it. If you've got $250,000 a month, we'll give you information. I'll give you more than you ever wanted, more than you won't like what you'll hear either. Well, because all of the beliefs that make people feel warm and fuzzy with those little ideas they get on the internet, there's the conventional mainstream view, there's the internet conspiracy view. And then there's basically the truth. The truth is so much worse. You don't want to go there.
Well, let's take a point here, because this is a new audience and they need to be brought up to speed. I hope that some of my listeners from my previous network are able to tune in and listen. I really hope so. I'd like to have them, be able to find me. But what you need to realize, folks, is that whenever I have guys like Gordon on, and I have a lot of guys, nobody's like Gordon, but I have a lot of good intelligent assets who come on. And really what you hear is going to be the unvarnished truth as far as we know. You're not going to get the internet extremist conspiracy view. You're not going to get the mainstream propaganda whitewash. We're going to try to give you as accurate of information as humanly possible so that you know really what's going on, because this country has a problem, and that is the whole premise of our democracy, our democratic republic we live in, is based on an informed electorate. Well, if the electorate is deliberately misinformed, how can they make informed decisions?
And Michael, 90% of the, we'll call it the independent news, 90% of internet news personnel are nothing but Zionist neocon mouthpieces. None of them are. They're all, we hate Obama. What I want is I want Bush to come back. Because we have to fight that war against, Syria. We've got to certainly have to start a war with China, because that's on the Bush-Cheney agenda. Now, they aren't willing to fight that war. I fought a couple of them, and I didn't care for them. I thought they were, certainly Vietnam was stupid. But, it's funny, but what we've done now is, since we have a Negro president, they call him the darky in the White House here, since we've got that, what we have are the right-wing bigots, morons, knuckle-dragging idiots are now back to what we had in the Clinton administration. Just a little aside here. The Michigan militia was the most powerful militia in the country. The Michigan militia disbanded itself when George W. Bush got in office on the basis, we finally have a president we can get behind. A couple of months later, of course, the Bush administration, aided by Israelis and others that I recognize as hirelings in this case, blew up the World Trade Center, invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, suspended habeas corpus, established Homeland Security, pushed through the Patriot Act, and these are things that Mr. Obama has never had the guts or forethought to trust the American people to dismember. But within 3 years, the United States was going to be an unrecognizable police state and has been since that day. We established, we lost all rights to fair trial. We decided we could murder any American citizen, hold any American citizen anywhere as long as we wanted. We could torture anyone wherever we wished. We began building a huge drug empire, larger than the one the CIA had always been running before. We built secret prisons around the world. We became the most hated country on earth. And now we have people who liked every single bit of that. Suspension of habeas corpus, Homeland Security. You know, it's funny, people complain, Homeland Security is buying all the 40 caliber ammunition. If you've got real guts, shoot 10 millimeter. Why do you have a 40 caliber? Who would want one of those things? I've even got one here. It's a shamefully worthless piece of equipment, as good as they get. Oh, there's going to be shooting hollow points. I hope their pistols will feed the hollow points. Most don't. But the issue being, if they're worried about that, why are they supporting the people that put Homeland Security on the map to begin with?
Let's talk for a minute here, Gordon, because you've touched on some bigger themes. And like I said, this is a new audience, and we have to introduce them to things. Let's go back to November of 1963. When we first became aware that George H.W. Bush, while in the employ of the CIA, was at Daley Plaza. And we know what happened that day. JFK was murdered. George H.W. Bush continued his career at the CIA until he became director of the CIA, at which point he left the directorship of the CIA and became Ronald Reagan's vice president. Well, within Reagan's first 6 months, there was an assassination attempt against him, but it was not against Reagan, unsuccessful. So Bush 41 had 8 years as Reagan's VP, had 4 years as president himself. He installed the Clintons into an 8-year regime. Then his son was appointed by the corrupted Supreme Court. The Supreme Court interfered in the electoral process, which they're forbidden to do. But they interfered and appointed George W. Bush as the first dictator in this country, where George H.W. Bush, his father, put Dick Cheney in as his really chief operating officer, if you will, so that they could continue this criminal enterprise, started two illegal wars, torture, waterboarding, all of that. And you know, now this guy, Obama, and I'm not an Obama fan. I come from the other side of the political spectrum that Gordon does. There's nothing liberal in my bones. I've always been a conservative. I can't call myself a Republican anymore. I'm an independent. But you look at this guy, Obama, who comes in here and tries to change something after the Bush crime family has had over 50 years to put people in places on the Supreme Court, ahead of every bureaucracy, Department of Justice, Department of State, everywhere you look, the Pentagon, every place you look, they've had a chance to put people who are more loyal to the Bush crime family than they are to the American people or the Constitution or this government or anything at all. They put them first, and you wonder why Obama can't accomplish a damn thing.
Well, the problem I have in addition to this is that Sean Hannity is part of the Obama crime family. When I look at InfoWars, and I enjoy InfoWars, I enjoy Alex Jones. Alex Jones has done some great work. But I look at him politically, and he seems to be in line with the Zionist extremists in Israel. And for those of you who don't know, 28% of the readership for veterans today is Israeli. And we're one of the largest news sites in the world. We're now reprinted on Fars, which is the largest news and entertainment website in the world.
Hey, Gordon. Gordon, we've got our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in a few minutes, folks. This is Mike Harris on Revolution Radio. My guest today
is senior. Can I get you anything from the kitchen, Mike?
Sure. You know, a couple of croissant with a little brie on it. Okay, that'd be great.
Microwave that brie or not?
Sure. Well, good afternoon and welcome back. Oops. Well, good morning and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Revolution Radio. My guest today is senior editor of VeteransToday.com, Gordon Duff. Gordon, you back with us?
Yeah, I can.
You're still in the kitchen, still making a snack. There you go, my kind of guy. Anyway.
No brie. What you're going to get is Ritz crackers and Velveeta.
Hey, that's what I was raised on. Come on.
That's what we eat here in Ohio.
That's what I was raised on, Ritz crackers and Velveeta. You can't beat it.
Let's take a few minutes to go into the veterans issues here, because a week or so ago, the American people actually became aware, because CNN told them they could, mind you, although it wasn't the holy cow, Christine Amanpour. By the way, a totally despicable person. And if you don't know why, I'm not going to tell you. But we found that at one VA hospital, and this one's in Phoenix, 40 veterans died because their appointments, you know, you show up at a hospital and you've got some kind of horrible cancer, a tumor the size of a grapefruit's coming out of your forehead, and they give you aspirin, or in this case, if you're in Britain, paracetamol or acetaminophen, and send you home. Well, the American people heard about this because even though Veterans Today has been saying this for minimally 10 years, nearly every day, that the Department of Veterans Affairs, and this was our issue, I guess, it's never been very good. I'm a totally disabled veteran, 100%er. For those of you who are a permanent in total, by the way, it's never been good. First time I went into a VA hospital was 1970 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. There's a movie called Article 99. If you haven't seen it and you're a veteran and you can find it somewhere, don't watch it because it'll make you depressed. But it describes VA hospitals as we know them. I'm not attacking the employees of the Department of Veterans Affairs. Many are my friends. I certainly have good doctors who I don't think are able to practice medicine responsibly at the VA. Good dental team here in Toledo. Very good people. Say hi to Doug Yoshino down there. Good friend, great guy. But we have some really good people at the VA. But the VA, well, during the Bush administration, the United States began fighting two useless wars on behalf of Israel and Wall Street, wars that, by the way, for those of you who don't know, we got our tails kicked in Iraq, we got our tails kicked in Afghanistan, just like in Vietnam. Both countries are not only utterly against us, and absolutely, and I visit both of them, but we lost big time and snuck home, and of course, certain people, during these wars, and this is during the break, I was listening to your promo for another show here. The 1% didn't become 1%. It's 1/10 of the 1%. 400 families control 70% of the wealth of the United States. 400 families alone. The 1% has lost of its percentage of wealth. During the Bush administration, the 1% in general lost 35% of their wealth to the 1/10 of 1%.
Let's even go a little further than that, Gordon, because if you look at your average middle-class person, they've lost over 45% of their total wealth, and they've gone through almost 90% of their savings since the financial meltdown of 2007-2008.
And that's what we call conservative economics, and that's what the GOP's all about. And the president wants to have a $10 minimum wage. And oh my goodness, that's going to put Walmart out of business.
Well, Gordon, now, I've got to debate you on this because there's a different approach to this. And
you're not going to win, Michael.
I don't care. I don't think that the minimum wage is the right approach. First of all, we have to remove the downward pressure on the American worker. And that downward pressure is caused from two sources. One of them is the 50 million illegal aliens who've snuck into this country are taking jobs from entry-level jobs from Americans. That's one of them.
Saying that we're going to put up tariffs and we're not going to import any goods from overseas.
No. Then the other issue is that we need to take the pressure off that offshoring has caused to our manufacturing base because offshoring.
And how are we going to do that?
Well, I like the tariff approach. I think a 45% import tariff.
So then you are going to a tariff.
I like the tariffs. I like it a lot.
And you're hoping somehow that after you back-ass your way around here, that the wealthy in power, that the police state is going to decide it's going to pay people more because jobs that are in this country, we're going to have to rebuild our domestic base to where jobs will actually earn money because there'll be an increase in productivity. Because for those of you who don't know, through the 1960s, the 50s and 60s, the increases in wages and standard of living that Americans enjoyed were entirely subsidized by work productivity in the manufacturing sector. Through the 80s and 90s, we began dismembering, as Michael's pointed out, that manufacturing sector, and in doing so, the value of work performed within the United States because of policies that were forced on the American people by a police state and organized crime. And none of this was done by the people of the United States. The economy was restructured to create a slave labor kleptocracy, and this is what we're in. And the point I have right now is that, well, people don't like paying the slaves enough to live. And since we have a police state and since every little police department has a 500-man SWAT team with armored personnel carriers and wiretapping equipment, by the way, some very nice Israeli wiretapping equipment. I want to thank those guys over there.
It's the best. It is the best, isn't it?
Guys. You guys in Israel, you make good stuff. And
all right, I'm back.
Michael, and did you pull a plug there?
No, I did not. That was artificially induced from an outside source. I had nothing to do with that. But it's funny.
And for those of you out there in the audience, this is a Sunday, an extremely low internet traffic day. We're broadcasting over Skype, and you know, I talk on Skype around the world all the time, and all this paranoia. I think we just hit a nerve there with somebody, you know. And we're gonna
continue to do that. You know, the thing is, I'm on a hard wire DSL line, and you know, I've got a very very fast connection, but yet they have the ability to make my signal go away.
I'm on designated fiber. And that took a lot of complaining with UVerse, by the way, but I have fiber to my house here. And I won't say anything bad about AT&T. As troublesome as UVerse is, you guys have not done a bad job. Now, we had started here and we're jumping around, which is just fine. Talking about veterans. Now, my issue with Shinseki, the current Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and this is, I represent a fairly large group of activists, veterans, and certainly attorneys that work in the area, and we are a Veterans Today, it's a veterans organization, and at this point, the largest active organization in the United States of veterans. We have 2.4 million active members, not people that will show up occasionally or get the magazine. We also have we're also an official news service for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Shinseki, who is a nice kind of guy, and Obama, who frankly, compared to Bush from a veteran standpoint, is a joy. Here's the problem I have with him. he was unwilling to believe the conspiratorial end here, that Bush had been that bad, that he had decided to finance his wars on the backs of American veterans, that the veterans of the Gulf War, the initial Gulf War, over 10,000 of them, and we don't know the number, it could be 30,000, but we know that 10,000 have died of what could be the toxic soup, vaccines, whatever. And I'm not an anti-vaccine guy, but I will think that, you know, I'm willing to accept that vaccines killed over 10,000 veterans. For those of you that don't know, and we had been telling the audiences all along, but only when it hit the New York Daily News, that 70,000 New Yorkers have applied for funding from a fund that represents victims of 9/11. 70,000, there are 70,000 victims. 39,000 are first responders. 12,000 are mostly workers on Wall Street. This is a cancer fund, and the cancers are all multiple myeloma, thyroid, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They are radiation sickness. And anyone that believes that toxic soup, that every building in New York is apparently built out of something that whenever they drop a building, 100,000 people within a square mile are going to get cancer. 30,000 will die, and 70 more thousand are dying in a square mile. Anyone who believes that, and that's what you've been told to believe, along with, I was on a Portugal Airlines out of Lisbon to let's say somewhere along the coast of Africa a couple days ago, and was discussing 9/11 with the stewardesses, and anybody who really thinks that one of these airplanes like this could knock down a big building doesn't ride in one of them all day long. You're lucky you don't take a can opener up and just poke a hole through one of them. But we don't need to necessarily go there. Let's go back to the veterans. How many veteran suicides do we have from the most recent Bush wars? Now, we have 6,000 combat dead. We have 40,000 seriously physically disabled. We have 1.1 million listed as totally disabled in addition. 100,000 minimum, and this is the real figure. Russia Today got this for me. They blew my socks off with this one. Suicides and 1.1 million awaiting disability. So the cost of the Bush wars is this: 106,000 dead, 40,000 limbs and full paralysis, and 2.5 million disabled wage earners, totally disabled. Nearly 3 million disabled, 106,000 dead. When we add the other little war where we thought we lost 224, we stopped counting when that hit 10,000. I am told it's at 30,000. But our little wars have killed an entire generation and have now matched nearly the initial five-year figures from Vietnam. Vietnam, as far as suicides, cancer deaths, and others, the total deaths of Vietnam sit at 2.2 million deaths.
Well, and that's
the Vietnam War.
Yeah, and the other issue that people need to factor in here, Gordon, is these wars are still new. The wounds are still fresh. And as time goes on, you fast forward 5, 10, 20 years in the future, those numbers are going to escalate by orders of magnitude.
Well, the idea of the free wars, what Veterans Affairs stopped doing with suicides, when suicides hit 30,000, they began shuffling the numbers around, saying, well, we lose one every 8 minutes, and then the Army has one suicide in Iraq every 4.5 days or 3 days or whatever. but we never heard the numbers. Well, it hit 100,000. If we want to know why, we're where we are. And the kinds of things that bring about these suicides, after three deployments, typically a combat vet, and since we're fighting wars with National Guard and Reserve people, they come home, and the second time you come home, your wife's got a boyfriend. Or, if it's a young lady, hubby's doing the same thing. And it's just what happens. The third time, it's not only divorced, but you're paying to support some other guy. Your pay is going into child support, but the military just threw you out. You're no longer making $84,000, $85,000 a year from the military because you've been on antipsychotic drugs, as 40% of the military is, for 4 years. There isn't enough left of you from the risperidone and tramadol from pain and trazodone to make you sleep and sertraline to deal with your nightmares and that so many of the troops, and they say that 28% of our military is on those. Well, only 20% of our military times 28 are the group that's involved in combat, meaning that almost all of them are on those things. Well, enough years of those things. What can we tell you? You're no longer able to sexually perform if you've been on sertraline that long. Not even Viagra is going to help. Nothing. So you come home, you're angry, post-traumatic stress, you don't sleep. You come home to a situation where your family has abandoned you, that the new of heroic dad marching off to war, now it's heroic dad marching off to shoot at kids at the side of the road, or as with Vietnam, I think I was told that I spent most of my time bayoneting babies. I didn't even have a bayonet. Couldn't bayonet babies. We'd use bamboo for that. We didn't have knives. If you wanted to kill a baby, you have to kick them. I mean, that was Marine Corps stuff anyway. We have people that are addicted to drugs, addicted to painkillers, in pain, seriously physically disabled, permanently mentally disabled. Nobody can sit through this much idiocy and keep themselves whole. And then they come back to a country full of, and this is what I'm talking to out here, Michael. And we did a house cleaning a few years ago with Veterans Today when we began pulling in a huge amount of traffic from Fox News people. We do better conspiracies. We've got better writers. We get real news. But I don't want those people. Those people who cheered us into war. If you were watching 9/11, and you watched what looked like planes hitting, and I'm not so sure anymore. I'm not sure of anything unless I'm riding on one, whether it's real or not. I've seen too much. You know, we saw an airliner disappear a few weeks ago. So it's off the planet right now, as far as everyone I know is concerned. It's not even on this planet. You know, heaven forbid, you know, Mrs. Clinton and the dragon people are playing with it on Mars now, as far as we know. But anyone who saw and believed anything, when they know that hijackings have gone on since the 1960s, that the U.S. is capable of shooting any airliner down, just like with Flight 370, well, it turned and went away, and the hijackers or the pilot or whatever, they unplugged the transponder. Well, the plane's got 15 or 20 different indicators built into the plane that can never be turned off, including an anti-hijack autopilot override, where they simply, and this is done through the Central Intelligence Agency, every plane with not just fly-by-wire, but fly-by-wire autopilot, and that's all of the big Airbuses and Boeings, can be taken control of, overridden, and they are flown to specific airports. We published at Veterans Today the patents for this. We showed how they were installed. The systems are in the plane in areas where, unless you can crawl down a wing through the fuel tank, you're never going to get to them. There's no way to hijack a plane. There's no way to make one disappear. You know, even right now, Iran has announced that their new radar system can see any of our stealth planes. How do you think you're going to hide an airliner?
Well, you're
there's
not.
Nowhere in this, there's nowhere in this earth we don't watch.
Well, Gordon, let's talk a little bit about 370 because, you know, it's pretty obvious this is another crime. You know, like 9/11 was a crime. It was not a terrorist event. It was a criminal act perpetrated against the American people. This Flight 370 is another crime. This is a hijacking. This was a theft, we think, of intellectual property via the engineering team from Freescale Semiconductor that was riding on that plane. But I digress.
Now, the point I have is that it seems like every so often, now I ordered a couple of guns today from Bob's Gun Shop down in Kentucky. These are Adams Arms Blems, ARs with a gas piston system. I wanted to play with their piston system. Adams are of late, they've been working very well. I've got a number of ARs. I want to adapt pistons to a couple of the short barrels. And we talk about guns. You've got gun guys.
Oh, wait. Let's stay on. Finish your point. You were going to make a point. I want you to finish it.
Yeah. Where was I going with this, Michael?
You were going with how difficult, how impossible it is to hijack. That it literally cannot be done.
Well, the simplest point we ran into is this. We had, and we published all of this, and I know that the articles have been read by 1 by 6 million people, so there's no excuse to not know. But Flight 370 had Rolls-Royce Trent engines that were leased to the airline.
All right, Gordon, we're coming up on the top of the hour black. We'll be right after this break, top of the hour. We'll be right back, folks. More with Senior Editor of VeteransToday.com, Gordon Duff. Stick with us. Well, good afternoon. Welcome. This is Mike Harris on Revolution Radio. Welcome to the second hour of the show. My guest today is Senior Editor from VeteransToday.com, Mr. Gordon Duff. Gordon, welcome back. Well, it is. It's good to have a second hour because that was one of the complaints that I had once I got moved to that evening time slot was that I didn't have enough time and you had to rush the guests to get through and make their point and didn't have enough. There was some subject that didn't get fleshed out well enough, but we were just talking about the Rolls-Royce Trent engines. And
Rolls-Royce Trent engines, and this is, we got a report from the chief of security of one of the major airlines and spoke highly of Rolls-Royce. And they named them after rivers, River Trent in this case, because they always keep running. Well, they always keep running because a Rolls-Royce Trent engine, while in an aircraft, is under the control of Rolls-Royce in Britain. They actively control every function of the engine. And not through an occasional data stream, but through a broadband data stream that runs continually. They can shut off any engine. They can adjust anything within an engine on the fly anywhere in the world. And Rolls-Royce knows exactly where the plane is, what altitude, how fast it's going. Every second of every day, it's got their $25 million engine in it. Or in this case, two of them. Rolls-Royce knew where it was, and when that plane turned and made its head toward Diego Garcia, they knew every step of the way. When it landed, when the engines were turned off, where it was, they always knew, and they've never said, and they could say at any time.
Well, let me ask you to speculate here. So who has the enough juice to get a company like Rolls-Royce to roll over, sit down, and shut up?
Who or what?
Who or what has enough juice to get Rolls-Royce, a big
well,
company
we're on
like that?
Revolution Radio, so we might as well say it. You know, I was sitting in an intelligence briefing where with people in uniform, and Flight 370 was the primary interest people had, even over terrorism in their own country, because here's the kind of question: who can steal a modern airliner, especially one? Now, did this plane have a 2,700-mile range, Michael? That's what they told us, right?
That's what they told us, but I think we actually have a 500-mile range beyond that. I think that's a conservative figure.
The actual number, 10,648 miles is how far a plane actually flies.
Okay, so what they're telling you...
With 330 pounds of fuel, the model they have is an ER with extra fuel tanks in the chassis. That model will fly for 23 hours. That plane that they said was going to go down just off Australia somewhere, if it had flown toward Antarctica, it would have run out of fuel in northern Mexico after flying under Antarctica, across South America, and all the way up. It had that much fuel. And then I remember them saying after 2 weeks that it had gone down 400 miles north of Antarctica in the middle of the circumpolar currents. And the wreckage was not only still floating and together, which is pretty amazing, but was in the same place, although it had been in a 6-mile-an-hour current for, and anybody, that is, if you're on a computer, you'd pull up calculator, place the wreckage somewhere, and 6 times 24
times 14.
And realize that at the latitude that plane is said to have gone down, the entire circumference of the planet is 2,500 miles, not 25,000 miles, 2,500 miles. Well, it's not very, hey, you can go around and around the world standing on the South Pole just by pirouetting. Well, there, at 6 miles an hour, that wreckage had gone around the world already. And sure as hell, it wasn't standing still. As for who has the plane, it's what has the plane. There's one place that many of us have already gone, and with this, we go quiet. It's why no one's saying anything. Who can do this? Who can reach down, grab a modern airliner with every imaginable data stream coming out of it? There is no transponder you can unhook. That plane, everyone knows where it is. You can't take anything off this planet that we don't see. Radar doesn't require broadcast. Planet Earth, under the ionosphere, is a soup of radio signals. When you fly through the atmosphere on this planet, you leave a wake of RF that you reflect, you absorb, but you leave a wake that tells people how fast you are, how high you are. And the receivers for this, of what's called passive radar has been around for a very long time, and it is how people track low-flying missiles, which are a major threat. It's how they track low-flying aircraft. This was implemented since 1982 when air defense systems became absolutely bulletproof for high-altitude bomber interception. You know, there was no more Dr. Strangelove. You had to fly right down there cooking the chickens in the barn. That's the world and the only way you could go after that in stealth aircraft was passive radar. We've had passive radar worldwide for a long time, including receptors on phalanxes of satellites around the world. 4 of the satellites flying over that area happen to be ours, and operating synthetic aperture radar. I was asked why we didn't find it, and this was actually one that Ricardo, we will not mention Dr. Ricardo name, but he was grilled on this. Why didn't your satellites find the plane? And I had to step in and answer, because no one asked us to look for it, because we commercially run the only synthetic aperture radar covering that area of the world at less than 1 meter capability, military, and that's one of the surveillance intelligence offerings that Michael and I offer to our corporate clients. We own the corporation, and its investors own the satellite surveillance, the radar satellite surveillance coverage for those latitudes worldwide, with passes every 6 hours. So we have within our data right now, when someone asks for it, we have enough data to show where that plane is gone. Once we go into our data at a ground station with an algorithm, if we're paid to do so and passed to do so, we can tell where the plane went. We hold the data ourselves. But as far as who would do it, we go back to 2010, off Los Angeles, an ICBM came right out of the water and headed into the air right off Los Angeles. No submarine could ever get that close, no enemy or potential enemy submarine. The Chinese put one there, and they demonstrated that capability, an impossibility. It's impossible to disappear an airplane. Frankly, it's impossible. Sandy Hook was impossible.
Well, Gord, let me ask the next question then. Since we're being shown these impossible things, who and what is giving the demonstrations? That's the next question.
Well, the point would be, is the demonstration, who is it for? And we don't know. Here's what we're guessing, and we as the intelligence community, you're getting on the good side of your 40% here. Somebody was told, we're going to disappear a plane. You can't do anything about it. Watch us. Okay? And then they did it. Who did they do it for? I don't know. But is this why it was done? There's no other reason. Somebody did it as a demonstration. Not for all of planet Earth, but they did it to show somebody they meant business. Over what? Above my pay grade. But I believe that's what went on. That's what all of us believe. Who has that kind of power? Who would do something like that as a demonstration? And I'm saying, I don't think they're humans.
Well, let me ask the next question. Who would be impressed by such a thing? Who was the intended audience? Let me rephrase the question.
The audience would probably be Preston James, SSG.
So the secret shadow government, okay.
Secret shadow government probably needed to be told that they were too big for their britches.
Well, I'll agree with that, that's for sure.
Because they're probably injecting themselves into someone else's franchise. And that's another one of these theories here where we're getting into an extreme area where not paid to do this, and don't recommend people here. It's a nice day today. You know, I'm saying listen to the show here. You know, I've got 78 degrees outside. We're planting tomato plants, working the greenhouse, and I'm charging the battery in my motorcycle. Take the kids somewhere. Live every day like it's your last, frankly, because you know it could be. But live your life like out of Castaneda. Like every day is your last, live the best life you can. Be the best person you can. Don't sit here and dig your way in, because you don't want to know that you're living on a farm and that you're being allowed your semblance of freedom. The freedom you've got here, if you believe that you have a government, then you believe that they can control you. They can only control us as long as we allow them to control how we think. Toward that end, you know, listen to Michael. Do not read the news other than, I'm very hesitant to even listen to the weather and sports anymore. I've got questions about that. You can't afford to be part of what they have going on.
Well,
I believe in money because it still allows me to buy things. Is it real? No. Don't be a part of any of this. you know, we learned this is part of the 1960s thing that we lost, that our generation lost. I'm sitting here at 65 years old. We had learned to tune in, turn on, and drop out. It's what we all needed to do, and we needed to stay there. We needed to stop fighting their wars and paying their bills and participating in their crooked elections and playing with their economy. We needed to stop this. We needed to set up our own parallel secret shadow government and move away from theirs. And instead, anytime we put anything together, we were COINTELPRO infiltrated. One of the things we learned a few weeks ago is how many of the people in alternative media are working for, what was the program called, Identify and what now? Do you remember?
Identify and Contain.
Identify and Contain. How many of the names of people that are considered, you and I are the great bastions of the independent news, but how many of the others were turned out to be FBI informants, Michael?
Well, let's just say you would be shocked at how many there were. There was probably close to 8 to 10 that we were given off the top, names that people would recognize, that anyone who's listened to any of the alternative news would recognize these 8 to 10 names. And we were told this by an insider, a radio insider who's got 20 plus years experience on this. And he bumped into it up close and personal, and it rattled this guy. And that's why he came to us, is to share what he knew under great fear.
Now, we have individuals here among these. One radio host who sees himself as a shock jock was recruited based on having been charged with mortgage fraud. Another major radio and network owner has been faced with an induced health problem of some kind and coerced. Another major individual of one of the largest organizations, certainly larger than anything I run, as far as we know, gleefully jumped on board. Here's the difficult thing I have. You know, we listened to, we're going back to two breaks ago, and we have someone talking about a country run by the 1% where people would vote for things that are against their best interests. Well, the point being, why is so much of alternative news not only right-wing, they do nothing but parrot Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, CNN, Fox News, the lie rags, and certainly the despicable...
Well, and Gordon, there's something else going on, too. And the source that came to us and told us about this Identify and Contain program. And by contain, they mean to imprison. That's how they want to contain. But this program of Identify and Contain also told us that one of the tools that they use is this fear porn, to where they get people so afraid that, number one, they donate money, and number two, they become full of despair, to where they realize, falsely realize or conclude that they have no hope, that they have no power.
And you know what? It's very hard to not be a part of this, because it's demanded of you and I that we deliver this by the ton. And I don't want to do it.
I want to keep an upbeat tone here. I want to offer solutions. I want people to just, like I said, we do not want to give an agenda here for what
solutions. Solutions are just this: stop listening to these people at all. I don't know if I can even tell you to listen to me. I don't know why people should be telling you anything at all.
Well, the key here, Gordon, is people need to develop a sense of discernment and trust your intuition and learn to discern what is true from what is not. If something is too gloomy, too negative, it's probably put there for a reason to make you lose hope. If something is too good, too optimistic, it's probably put there for a reason to make you gain hope. And that's how they play you. And that's the whole issue that we have going on in this country. It's a war for your heart and mind of the American people. And what I try to do, and I know you try to do as well, is we try to just give people information to where they can make their own decisions. Because, like I said, I'm not smart enough to think for anybody else. People have to come to their own conclusions. I may disagree with their conclusions, but I'm certainly not going to tell them what or how to think. That's above my purview.
Wait, here's what I know. Something that most of you don't get to do that I get to do is I get to travel around the world. I've done this for a fair length, as has Michael, that we have sat at the table with people and with me, dozens of countries. In this case, I was in Africa. For whatever reason, a good percentage of the people I'm closest to and we're closest to are African or Americans of that, or Jews or Israelis or Arabs. And we all sit at the table together, and Michael's there with me as often as not. And there is never, among people of any kind of taste and manners, there is never any mention of religion, or other than the fact that I harass everyone for their religion. You know, I've been seen to insult certainly the Jewish religion, the Christian religion. Actually, I attack all of them equally, you know, very much that case. But that's just me, because I really don't have manners and breeding. But we recognize a clear universal humanity. There are some people different than others, but when we put ourselves together, we bond together and work together. This is the point, Michael. We have a corporation. We actually own a series of corporations and holding companies, and we're a very international group. People from dozens of countries. We are all friends. We've known each other for years. No one has the least bit of difficulty working with anyone else. The loyalty within the group supersedes anything else, because we work as a sense of community. What we've done, we've put together a defense corporation out of people from military, intelligence, banking, medicine, a variety of areas. But we've put together people from dozens of countries, very unusual backgrounds, and we've built a simple community like should exist for, I'd like to think, all of you are living right now, where we stick by each other as friends more than anything else. We have a loyalty to each other. And in business, by the way, that gets a little bit touchy. When there's money floating around, sometimes billions of dollars floating around, it's touchy. But it's all we have. All we have is the loyalty we have to each other. It's what we had. It's all that held us together in Vietnam. I was in a Marine rifle squad. And we had nothing in common. You know, I'm the white guy college puke, you know. And all we had was each other. And we had to overlook the differences now. And now we're supposed to be defined by the differences. The Negro president. And going back to where we were last hour, my disappointments here, I'm carrying this around, is because Obama took office and he was unwilling to believe what had gone on with the Bush criminal regime. Oh, it's all I can... No, 9/11, they blew up the World Trade Center and the invasions were for nothing? Well, you know, one person in the U.S. Senate voted against the invasion of Iraq. That was Barack Obama. He knew it was wrong. In Britain, for years, they've had an inquiry going on into Tony Blair called the Chilcot Inquiry. They have investigated why the U.S. and Britain went into Iraq. And what they have found is that Iraq was a criminal conspiracy that involved the murder of anyone that opposed it, that involved false flag terrorism, that the U.S., Britain, and others went into Iraq as part of the efforts of world organized crime. And the findings of the Chilcot Commission states this clearly, and not just against Tony Blair, but it indicts Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, and all of Myers, all of those with them are indicted as war criminals, all of them. All of the information necessary. This has been a multi-year inquiry. Everything that's needed to send them to the dock, certainly for one of those prison sentences that they do at The Hague, or to try them for treason here in the United States, everything is there proven, even without going into the endless wealth of information that others of us have put together about 9/11. What they already have and is sitting there, especially supposedly classified, we have so much information. We have enough to indict the entire Bush administration. And instead of backing up on all of this and coming to the American people saying these wars were illegal, they were wrong, we're going to get our tails kicked, we've wasted a generation, we have to stop, Obama sat there for 4 years and let the wars drain down and down and kill thousand after thousand and spend billions and billions and billions of dollars. Now, we know he came to the American people and told the American people a year ago that he had tried to close Guantanamo, and the Republican Party had not only blocked it, but then blamed him for failing to close it after they blocked the funds that were necessary to close Guantanamo, because apparently to stop torturing people, it requires money, heaven forbid, and the House was able to block that.
I'm listening here, and I have to tell you, you know, Gordon, I think that Obama, if he really would have been sincere about hope and change, you know, my disappointment with him is that he didn't indict Bush and Cheney and that whole company.
Of course. And toward that end, those people who think that he should be impeached for failing to perform as in accordance to his oath of office, failing to arrest Bush and Cheney, failing to arrest and imprison a very significant number of Republican politicians and a series of Democrats. Many belong in prison. Many. You can go through Washington. I'm saying in the city of Washington right now, 75,000 people living in the Washington area, working inside the Beltway, 75,000 need to be doing time as war criminals, serving minimally 20 years, 75,000 war criminals. Within our government, within our military, tens of thousands of people need to be in prison because, well.
Well, we've got a break coming up here. Gordon, keep the thought. We'll be right back after the short break for our final half hour. So stick with us, folks. Be right back.